Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hello, friends. How are you? I hope you're in good health and safe. Thank you for being here, for your support, always. And if you're looking for ways to support, there's links in the description. You can follow those. It's also links to a lot of the resources available through this school, either through the website, the bookstore, the mandala store. You'll see all the links in the description, as well as Patreon links for those who can support us financially. It's a super big help. Some of you support that way through PayPal directly. You don't have to go through Patreon. Anyway, all the videos on Patreon as well as a site called Odyssey. If you're familiar, they use Bitcoin. I'm not into all that, but it's an avenue that I wanted to make available. All right, so we're in the midst of the Lotus Sutra chapter three, right? The parable. I forgot the book at home. Yeah, chapter four. And we're in the midst of this parable that the senior monks are using now after Shariputra has been given the promise of he can now reach Buddhahood. He always could, but the cultural norms and traditions that just didn't stubbornly held on to people who were practicing for so many years, Shakyamuni is saying, no more. You guys have to stop doing this. What I've been trying to teach you along and what I hope that you had discovered on your own by now is that Buddha is part of what you all phenomena is. You just need to instantiate it. Wake it up. You have this capacity. What? Yeah. So now these older monks who are leaders of monks, they're saying, oh, man, we're so old and tired and have been practicing with these old cultural traditional norms for so long. We never even thought it possible, right? We never raised the mind of joyfully doing that because it just wasn't, we didn't think it was available to us. Ugh, right? So now they're trying to explain themselves to Shakyamuni, and they've come up with this parable to say, look, it's like this son who, for whatever reason, rebelled against his father and took off, and in so doing, cut himself off from all of the wealth and privilege and so on and so forth that he would have had staying home and dealing with his relationship with his dad. Instead, went off and became a beggar and working for whatever. He ends up wandering around, forgetting where he's from, and finds himself in front of his father's home, doesn't even know it's his father, gets scared, oh man, I'm going to be in trouble if I'm anywhere near these rich people, right? And in fact, the father recognizes his son immediately. He sends out a couple of people to go grab him, and the son thinks he's under arrest and he's going to get maybe killed even. And the father sees his son just reacting and fainting, and he says to his people, never mind. Just, resuscitate him and send him on his way. And he thinks of a plan on how he can entice his son, who doesn't know he's his father, to kind of let him evolve in the rekindling of his relationship with his dad, yeah? So the father's wise in this way, yes? And of course, in the parable, the father is Shakyamuni Buddha. And the son represents all of these monks who for so long have never thought to beyond this provisional false nirvana that they've been chasing along with all of their old, reincarnation, multiple lifetime baloney, their magical thinking, yeah? Okay, so the son is let go, and he thinks he's got away with his life, while the father, now we rejoin the story, world-honored one, while the poor son, hired for wages here and there, unexpectedly arrives at his father's house standing by the gate, he sees from afar his father, right? I just told you about this. So the next paragraph, having reflected thus, after the son is released, he hastily runs away. Meanwhile, the rich elder on his lion seat has recognized his son at first sight, and with great joy in mind, has thus reflected, now I have the one whom my treasuries of wealth are to be made over. Always have I been thinking of this, my son, with no means of seeing him, but suddenly he himself comes up here in the lodging, right? So he dispatches his attendants, and a messenger says to the son, okay, now you are free, go wherever you will. The poor son is delighted, thus obtaining the unexpected. He rises from the ground and goes to a poor hamlet in search of food and clothing. Then the elder, desiring to attract his son, sets up a device. Secretly, he sends two men of doleful and undignified appearance, saying, you go and visit that place and gently say to the poor man, because he isn't telling anyone that that's his son yet. So he says to this poor man, there's a place for you to work here. You'll be given double the wages you're getting here. If the poor man agrees, bring him back and give him work. If he asks what work you do, wish him to do, then you may say to him, it is for removing a heap of dirt that we hire you, and we both also would work along with you. So there's no trickery here. You come work with us. Then the two messengers went in search of the poor son, and having found him, placed before him the above proposal. Thereupon the poor son, having received his wages beforehand, joins with them in removing the dirt heap. His father, beholding the son, is struck with compassion for and wonder for him. Yeah, he's like, I haven't seen my son in 50 years, and here he is working like a slave. What has become of him? He doesn't even know who he is. Another day, he sees at a distance, through a window, his son's figure, gaunt, lean and doleful, filthy and unclean from piles of dirt and dust. Thereupon he takes off his string of jewels, his soft attire and ornaments, and puts on again a coarse, torn, and dirty garment, smears his body with dust, takes a dustpan in his right hand, and with an appearance of fear, right, probably meaning an appearance of sternness, or Japanese rendering is above. So fear, more like maybe a little disgust, weariness, you know, tired, like a laborer, right? He says to the other laborers, get on with your work. Don't be lazy. By such a device, he gets near his son, to whom he soon afterwards says, hey, my man. Sounds like Detroit. You stay and work here. Do not go again elsewhere. Don't follow the other laborers. You stay here. I will increase your wages, whatever you need, bowls, utensil, rice, wheat flour, salt, vinegar, and so on. Have no hesitation. Besides, there is an old and worn-out servant whom you shall be given if you need him. Wow, he's going up the ranks pretty well here. Must have impressed someone, yeah? If you need him, but be at ease in your mind. I am, as it were, your father. Do not be worried again. For what reason? I am an old and I'm advanced in years, but you're young and vigorous. All the time you've been working, you've never been deceitful, lazy, angry, or grumbling. I've never seen you have such vices as these, like the other laborers. From this time forth, you shall be as my own begotten son. He's not saying he's his father. He's saying, I feel fatherly toward you, you know. So I'm going to treat you like you're the only son I ever had. I've never had any sons, and these other laborers I can't trust, but I trust you. So he befriends him that way. And I guess the son's pretty gullible, yeah? world-honored one. Oh, sorry. Thereupon, the elder gives him a new name and calls him a son. Then the poor son, though he rejoices at this happening, still thinks of himself as a humble hireling. For this reason, for 20 years, he continues to be employed for removing dirt. Now, if you're keeping track, that means he's well over 70. He had to have left in his teens, yeah? So now he's in his 80s. So, again, time being this malleable thing in Shakyamuni's stories, parables, so on and so forth, instead of letting that get to your brain, just go along with the fact that there's a long period of time here, right? After this period, there's a confidence between them, and he goes in and out and at his ease, though his abode is still in the original place. He still lives in slovenly quarters, but he goes in and out of this house where he's aiding this old man as though playing the dutiful role of a son and getting a lot of the recompense that he's not accustomed to, yeah? World-honored one, then the elder becomes ill. It's about time. He must be 100 years or so, right? Knowing that he will shortly die, he says to the poor son, "Now I possess abundant gold, silver, and precious things, and my granaries and treasuries are full to the overflowing. The quantities of these things and the amounts which should be received and given, I want you to understand in detail." Why, man, look at all this opulence. What are you taking me into confidence for, eh? "Such is my mind. That's what I want. Do you agree to this, my desire, my will? For what reason? Because now I and you are of the same mind. Be increasingly mindful so that there be no waste. I'm going to turn these responsibilities over to you. You think you can handle it?" And the son is like, but he doesn't know he's his actual son, right? He thinks he's just doing a favor for this old man. And he's enjoying the benefits. But then the poor son accepts. He accepts his instructions and commands and becomes acquainted with all the goods, gold, silver, and precious things, as well as all the granaries and treasuries. But he has no idea of expecting to receive as much as this, or even a meal, while his abode is still the original place, and his sense of inferiority, too, he is still unable to abandon. But he has a knack for it, doesn't he? He learns the accounting and all of this stuff, but it's somebody else's stuff, yeah? After a short time has passed, again the father, knowing that his son's ideas have gradually been enlarged and his will well developed, and that he despises his previous state of mind, on seeing that his own end is near, commands his son to come and say, at the same time, gathers together his relatives and the kings, ministers, kshatriyas, and citizens. When they are all assembled, he thereupon addresses them, saying, "No, gentlemen, this is my son, begotten by me." What? You're kidding around again, right? "It is over 50 years since from a certain city he left me and ran away to endure loneliness and misery." Wait a minute. Well, it's over 70 if you're following the story. But anyway, "his former name was so-and-so, and my name is so-and-so. And at that time, in that city, I sought him sorrowfully. Suddenly, in this place, I met and regained him." He's telling the whole story, and the son's got to be catching on here. He's like, what's going on? Right? "This is really my son, and I am really his father." What? But now he's hearing it because he's sort of been indoctrinated into, you know, the wealth, the property, the work. But really? "Now all the wealth which I possess belongs entirely to my son." Whoa. and all my previous disbursements and receipts are known by this son. Well, that's true. World-honored one, when the poor son heard these words of his father, great was his joy as such unexpected news. And thus he thought, without any mind for or effort on my part, these treasures now come of themselves to me. Do you see the parable now? These great monks, who are now leaders of monks, have been following Shakyamuni's teachings all this time with this impoverished self-image that kept telling themselves, Buddhahood isn't reachable for me. That's not for me. I'm not deserving of that, right? I'm an ancient culture. I still believe in reincarnation and afterlives. And so in this life, the best I can achieve is this idea of nirvana. I can, get rid of my attachments. That's the best I can do. And I've done a good job of that. But that's as much as I can do, right? I can see the wealth and I can see, what Buddhahood might be like. But this is the maximal effort I can make in this life. I can't accomplish more. Just like the poor son thinks he's not deserving of any of the things that he's accounting for now in the wealth of his father, who he doesn't know, except now finding out, oh, you are my father. We are Buddha sons. You see the parable? So this is totally ours. Wow, we never even had a thought, right? So the parable is pretty effective at capturing this self-imposed ignorance. It's a bit of a shock. You and I might have a little harder time coming to terms with it, but in the parable, it happens rather suddenly, yeah? So today, the Tathagata, the rich elder, is the Tathagata, and we are all as the Buddha's sons. The Tathagata has always declared that we were his sons. We just weren't buying it, yeah? The Tathagata has always said this. World-honored one, because of the three sufferings in the midst of birth and death, we have borne all kinds of torments, being deluded and ignorant and enjoying our attachment to trifles. Today, the world-honored one has caused us to ponder over the root and remove the dirt of all diverting discussions of inferior laws or things. In these, we have been diligent to make progress and have got but a day's pay for our effort to reach nirvana. Having got this, we greatly rejoiced and were contented, saying to ourselves, for our diligence and progress in the Buddha law, what we have received is ample. But the world-honored one, knowing beforehand that our minds were attached to low desires and delighted in inferior things, lets us go our own way and does not discriminate against us, saying, you shall yet have control over the treasury of Tathagata knowledge. The world-honored one, by his tactful power, tells of the Tathagata wisdom, but we, though following the Buddha and receiving but a day's wage of nirvana, have deemed it a great gain and never devoted ourselves to seeking after this great vehicle. There's the crux of the whole shift that the Lotus Sutra represents. Not a shift in Buddha's teachings, but a shift in his students' understanding. They've been like the poor runaway who thought they understood, but really, even though they were discarding attachments, they were attached to discarding detachments, right? They never really got the full meaning, capacity, ability they have to simply awaken Buddha-ness. They just couldn't, no, I can't be deserving of that, just like the son who ran away. Continuing, we also have declared and expounded the Tathagata wisdom to bodhisattvas, but in regards to this great vehicle, we have never had a longing for it. Just didn't think it possible. Even though we teach what you teach us to bodhisattvas, didn't think it was possible. Right? They became excellent accountants. For what reason? The Buddha, knowing that our minds delight in inferior things, by his tactful power teaches according to our capacity. But still we do not perceive that we are really Buddha's sons. Now we have just realized that the world-honored one does not begrudge the Buddha wisdom. For what reason? From of old we are really sons of the Buddha, but only have taken pleasure in minor matters. If we had a mind to take pleasure in the great, the Buddha would have taught the great vehicle law to us. Now he, in this sutra, teaches only the one vehicle. He doesn't give us an escape hatch, right? And though formerly in the presence of bodhisattvas he spoke disparagingly of sravakas, who were pleased with minor matters, yet the Buddha had in reality been instructing them in the great vehicle. So even though until now, for over 40 years, seeing that we were runaway, not accepting, not understanding, seeking after lower goals, he reminded us, right, throughout, you can read many Mahayana sutras before this real, the Mahayana, the Lotus Sutra, but the previous or later, the middle period of teachings, you can read in them that Sravakas and Pratyagabuddhas are Ichantikas. They've scorched the seeds of Buddhahood. They'll never get there. Not because he was imposing that on them, but because that's what they had accepted. Oh, we've been misreading that all along. All this castigation against the lesser vehicles wasn't because Shakyamuni was damning them to lower paths. It's because they had chosen lower paths. Of course that made him upset. Of course it looked disparagingly upon them. Not because he put them there, it's because they put themselves there. Just like this young man who ran away from the objective of Buddhahood, thinking he was undeserving. This is a very important parable, yeah? Therefore, we say that though we had no mind to hope or expect it, yet now the great treasure of the King of the Law has of itself come to us. And such things that Buddha sons should obtain, we have all obtained. Ugh, we've been such fools, yeah? Then Mahakasyapa, one of the senior monks, desiring to proclaim this meaning over again, spoke thus in verse. We on this day have heard the Buddha's voice teach and are ecstatic with joy at having obtained the unprecedented. Not because he's never taught Buddhahood before, but because they're suddenly listening. They're hearing the Buddha's words, right? True Sravaka, not provisional Sravaka. You could see it that way. But to have Sravaka as a goal is one of the lesser teachings, because that's not the goal. That's just study. The goal is Buddhahood. The goal has always been Buddhahood. That's why I started this. And today, because I explicitly tell you, stop it. Pay attention. That's the Lotus Sutra. Bet you never heard it like that before. The Buddha declares that we, Sravakas, will become Buddhas. What? Right? It's not because you didn't say that before. It's because that's what they told themselves. his peerless collection of treasures we have received without seeking. Our own foolishness, yeah? It is like a youth, immature and ignorant, who leaves his father and runs away to other lands far distant, wandering about in many countries for over 50 years, lost. His father, with anxious care, searches in all directions. Wearied with his search, he abides in a certain city, and he waits, where he builds a house, enjoying the pleasures of life. Very rich in this house, with abundance of gold and silver, moonstones, agates, jewels, lapis lazuli, elephants, horses, you know, the whole retinue, and multiple people. His revenues and investments spread even to other countries. His traders and customers are found everywhere. Those who are practicing bodhisattva ways, learning from Shakyamuni. But the bulk of these in the assembly, all of these sentient minds in the assembly, still not aware of the teaching, aware by their own ignorance, beholden to lower goals. 1,000 myriad kotas of people surround and honor him constantly by the king. He is held in affection. All the ministers and noble families honor him highly. For all these reasons, his many guests, such are the abundance of his wealth and the greatness of his power. Shakyamuni Buddha, yeah? But his years are wearing away, and he grieves the more over his son. Right? Shakyamuni is an old man by this time. He's not going to be around forever. He's going to enter parinirvana, right? So he needs to clear this up with all these devotees, these disciples, these practicants. He's got to get him on the right track before he goes, yeah? I mean, that's why he started this whole thing. So morning and night he ponders, the time of my death is approaching. My foolish son has left me for over 50 years, right? He's been teaching the pre-Mahayana teachings for over 40 years, yeah? These things in my storehouses, what shall I do with them? All of this knowledge, right? At that time, the poor son seeks food and clothing from city to city, from country to country, sometimes getting something, sometimes nothing. Famished, weak and gaunt, covered with scabs and sores, gradually he passes along to the city where his father dwells. Hired for wages, he roams about, at last reaching his father's house. At that very hour, the elder, within his gates, has set up a great jeweled curtain and sits on a lion's seat, surrounded by his attendants, everybody taking care of him. Some are counting gold, silver, precious things, so on and so forth. The poor son, seeing his father, so noble and splendid, thinks, this must be a king or one of royal rank. Alarmed and wondering, he says, why have I come here? Again, he thinks to himself, if I tarry here long, I may suffer oppression and be driven to forced labor. Now, that's an interesting part of this parable, right? Because it suggests that all of these people drawn to this assembly, wondering, remember they were wondering, this isn't in this parable or this chapter, but that wondering, maybe we haven't even got there yet, whether this is an actual Buddha or a trick by Mara, yeah? Of course, mainly the example is the same. They show up to this assembly and they're still unsure. We've heard far and wide of the nobleness of this man, this teacher. Is it really Buddha? I mean, they're so convinced in their lower capacities that they don't even know for sure that this is Shakyamuni Buddha. But at any rate, so the poor son cries in alarm, faints away, and falls to the ground. This is just doubts. This is what I spoke of in the last video about Buddhist burnout. We try and try, and we sort of fall into a habitual practice, and we don't seem to be getting anywhere, like we're treading daimoku, right? Treading daimoku, there's a good one. You have to get serious. You have to really mean it. And how can you really mean it if you don't believe you're worthy of it? Then these men have caught me. I shall be killed. I'll never make it. Why for food and clothing did I come here? The elder, knowing that his son, being foolish and inferior, will not accept his word, nor accept that he is his father, with tactful method, again dispatches other men, one-eyed, squat, common, unimposing, saying, you go and tell him, saying, you be hired along with us to remove dirt and rubbish, and you shall be given double wages. The poor son, hearing this, is glad. So these are the tactful means, you know. Entice him to come to this assembly. And then the elder, donning a tattered, dirty garment, takes a dirt clod and goes to where his son is, and by that device gets near him, bidding him be diligent, saying, I've decided to increase your wages besides oil for your feet, plenty of food, right? All that stuff. Then with sharp words, he chides him. Get you on with the work, he says gently. So he's like being a boss. And the son is accustomed to that. I'll treat you like you're my son. There you go. The elder, being wise, gradually causes him to go in and out, and after 20 years employs him in the house affairs, showing him gold, silver, jewel, right? Becomes an accountant. He's raising his stature, his belief in himself through these expedient means and devices. This is very important instruction on bodhisattva work, right? You can't simply walk up to somebody and hammer him overhead. Hey, you can be Buddha. What? Remember that book, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance? There's a line in there that says, if you meet the Buddha on the street, kill him. It's not a book about the complete teachings of Shakyamuni. It's about something else. But that statement people have seized over the years and simply truly means that there is no one Buddha. There is no Shakyamuni Buddha. There is Shakyamuni, and there is his accomplishment of Buddha-ness. But we all have that capacity. Buddha is everything and everyone. It's the engine of life. So for somebody to say, I am Buddha, in our era, Mapo, it's a grave insult. It's taking on the qualities of the entire cosmos as owned by a human. Wrong. Right? Wrong, right? So, he then, you know the story, he gathers around all the important people, kings and ministers and so forth, and he introduces to them, this is actually my son, I am actually his father, he's going to take over the management of affairs here. And now the son, as these great monks equate themselves, suddenly realize, Oh, this has been available to us all along. Duh! This is actually mine. Now, if this were a Lifetime movie, it would take probably a series of movies to explore the entire catharsis of this, yes. But we need to move along here because the point isn't the story. The point is the meaning. That through our own samsaric ignorance, we fail to realize our full potential. This is why the Lotus Sutra, this is why Nichiren constantly is telling us, the incredible value of the Lotus Sutra, the Lotus Method, is that it already knows, it anticipates our Buddha nature, our Buddha-ness, and gives us a method for simply instantiating it, awakening it, invoking it. Not in some far-off future or multiple lifetimes. That's all. That's not Buddhism. That violates impermanence, emptiness, anatman. It violates every early tenet taught by Shakyamuni Buddha. And yet, the meaning of those teachings continued to fall short in those who were practicing, because they stubbornly held on to this idea that this life is to be suffered somehow. Even though in the first four Noble Truths teachings, Shakyamuni took that on head on. People just resist, right? We're really stubborn. We don't like change, but we don't realize how profound that sensibility, that ignorance is. No, you can experience life fully to your fullest potential all the time, moment to moment to moment to moment to moment. Why do you listen to the monkeys in your mind? Why do you constantly reinstantiate a lesser experience? You don't need to do that. And you are the one doing it. Don't blame it on your environment. It just reflects what you are thinking. Yeah, in this life, if you want to believe something, everything in your environment, from people to oxygen, will reflect exactly what you're saying to yourself. Stop it. All that I have, houses, people, I entirely give to him. He is free to use them as he will. The son thinks of his former poverty and inferior disposition, yet anew from his father, obtains such great treasures together with houses and buildings, all of this wealth, and so rejoices greatly. Wow, this is all mine. On receiving such an unexpected fortune. Why is it unexpected? It's been offered you your whole life. But you had trained yourself to be unexpected, right? So it is with the Buddha. Knowing that we are pleased with trifles, he did not before proclaim you will become Buddhas, but said that we who are attaining faultlessness and perfect in Hinayana are his Sravaka disciples. Okay, you're great students. How much study must you make before you realize the implications, the meaning of all this? The Buddha commands us, teach the most high way, and that these who practice it will become Buddhas. So they became good teachers and taught bodhisattvas how to attain Buddha, never understanding that was for themselves. They didn't get it. We, receiving the Buddha's teachings for the sake of great bodhisattvas, by numerous reasonings, by various parables, and by so many expressions, teach the supreme way, just as you've taught us. We become great students. The sons of the Buddha, hearing the law from us, day and night ponder over, and with unflagging zeal, practice it. Zeal. Again and again, we have these words encouraging us, exhorting us. Take this seriously. When you go to your, when Nichiren would say, when you go to your butsudan and chant with this mandala, I've given you every tool possible to really focus your mind. Because this is yours to experience right now. Buddha. Don't call an Uber. Don't get in a taxi cab. Just do it right where you are. Be it now. Invoke Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. With that kind of determination, zeal, single-mindedness, how many ways can Nichiren say this? How many ways can Shakyamuni say this? And yet, we love to just do habit stuff, right? Why are you eating right now? Because I had a taste in my mouth. I felt like, yeah, you weren't hungry, were you? Get hungry. Get hungry for Buddha. Don't just sit there with a family-sized bag of chips and go through the whole frickin' bag just mindlessly chewing and eating because the crunch is fun and the salt is nice. Get hungry. We, receiving the Buddha's teaching for the sake of great bodhisattvas by numerous reasonings, by various parables, and by so many expressions, teach the supreme way. The sons of the Buddha, having heard the law from us, night and day ponder and unflagging zeal practice it. Then the Buddhas will predict of them, you, in a future generation, shall become Buddhas. Now, should I rewrite that? Generation, for most of us, if not all of us, generation means, you know, a future lifetime, right? Or more specifically, sons of fathers of, right? Or daughters of mothers, so on. But by generation, we should think of the generation of each moment because we are energy, we are momentum. And each moment generates another, birthday, moment. That's what that means. So I should probably make a note of that. I wish I had the book here so I could scribble in it. But hopefully I'll remember that after this video and I'll go correct that or enhance that. The a priori law of all the Buddhas can only to bodhisattvas be expounded in full reality. So not to us, till now, was this truth taught. Well, it was taught, but it wasn't heard. Just as that poor son, who came to be near his father, though he knew all the goods, had no hope of possessing them, so we thought, we proclaimed, the treasury of the Buddha law, yet had no will or wish for it, being also like him. How lamentable, Nichiren would say, yeah? We, with the extinction of inward fires, considered ourselves satisfied. This is all we can do. This is our best. Having thus settled this matter, nothing more remained to be done. Ugh. So close. Even if we'd heard of the purification of Buddha lands and the conversion of living beings, we would never have rejoiced. For what reason? Because we fancied that all things were altogether empty, without birth, without extinction, nothing large, nothing small, without fault, without effort. How are you mixing that teaching up into Buddhahood? Thinking thus, we know with no conception of joy, because it's empty, it's not real, we for long neither coveted nor were attached to the Buddha wisdom. Nor had we any will or wish for it, but we, in regard to the law, considered we had reached finality. This is our lot. This is all we can do in life. How can you get that out of the teachings? Well, This is the power of samsaric traditions, cultural traditions, right? That is why I'm always railing against biases in these translations that come directly from religion or politic. They don't belong in Buddhism. It's not what Buddhism is about. But so entrenched are the world's peoples and cultures and politics and religions in our very thinking, Really, consider this. Next time you watch a Super Bowl commercial, how much religion is in it? It's incredible how it hides and disguises itself in there as just the reality of things. And yet it isn't. We, for a long time, he continues, practicing the law of the empty, obtained release from the triple world's distressing troubles, dwelling in the final bodily state, well, there it is, attachment, of nirvana, in which form still remains, the false or incomplete nirvana of the arhat. Being instructed by the Buddha, we thought we had, without a doubt, attained the way, and that we had therefore repaid the Buddha's grace. We're dutiful servants. To whom? To whom? Though we, for the sake of all the Buddha sons, have taught the Bodhisattva law that we should seek the Buddha way, yet we, in regard to this law, had never any wish or pleasure. Gosh, that's painful. Our leader saw and let us alone because he looked into our minds. So at first he did not stir up our zeal by telling us the true gain. Right? Just like the father saw his son faint and thought, I have to work out another way to reach him because he's so self-destructive. Yeah? Just as the rich elder, knowing his son's inferior disposition by his tactfulness, subdues his mind and afterward gives him all his wealth, so is it with the Buddha in his display of rarities. Knowing those who delight in trifles and by his tactfulness, subduing their minds, he instructs them in the greater wisdom. Today we have obtained that which we have never before. And with that, I think I'm going to call it a day. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Please surmount your doubts. Right? Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Instantiate your Buddha mind right away. Don't wait. Demand it of yourself, of your mind. Hey, pay attention, Buddha-ness. Knock these posing monkeys out of here. I'm not even thinking about them. I'm focused, Buddha. Yeah? With that kind of determination, single-mindedness, invoke Buddha-ness. You have the capacity. Just do it. I wish you all the greatest fortune and potential you can muster. And to do that, you got to stay healthy. So take care of your health. Savor your practice, my friends. It is incredible. Stay strong. I'll see you in the next one. Bye for now.